Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. With the growing need for affordable and supportive housing in Kingston, the city is taking steps towards new ways to help fund future projects. Back in April 2025, Council directed staff to explore the feasibility of using community bonds as a funding tool for municipal initiatives. At their meeting on December 2nd, staff returned to Council with a report and recommendations on how Kingston could begin moving in that direction. Community bonds are typically issued by nonprofits or charities, allowing residents and organizations to invest directly in local projects while earning a modest financial return. In addition to the financial benefit, they offer a social return by keeping investment dollars working within the community. Staff noted that this model has already been used successfully in several Ontario communities, including Toronto, Halliburton, Hamilton, and Ottawa.
One of the interesting ones was in Halliburton. They raised $850,000 in less than 9 weeks. So it was a really an efficient process with respect to that. Indwell Hopes and Homes, which I think is listed in the report, they just launched a $15 million project for a new rental building with 160 units in it. And I actually was just looking yesterday at an initiative that's been announced in Gray County. And it's actually, they're looking at the potential for community bonds, and it's actually through their Community Development Corporation, Community Investment Corporation that they have there. So which is also a new one. And that's the first one that actually has been linked to a municipality.
With unanimous support from Council, the city will now work with Tapestry Community Capital, a nonprofit consultancy that specializes in community bond financing, to assess whether this model could work for affordable housing in Kingston. That process will include consultations with potential investors and community organizations, as well as a community readiness assessment in the coming months. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the potential impact of this new approach.
I think we have an opportunity here again to get some more affordable housing into our community. And I'm looking forward to the report coming back from Tapestry, provided everyone supports us moving ahead, to see what our community can do. This gives the opportunity for everyone in Kingston who is concerned about this issue to contribute. So it's not just for big investors. This is for all of us who maybe have a few dollars to put in, who want to see our community flourish. The amount of community building that's coming out of this, one of the things that was noted at the meeting was that oftentimes once the bond matures, people simply turn around and reinvest it in another project. And it's something to be able to walk past a project that's been built and say, I helped to do that. So I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed that we can see something really positive come out of this community that will help to, you know, get us further along in the process of providing homes and creating a stronger community.
The staff report also highlights the urgency behind the move. In 2023, Kingston's median household income rose by about 5%, while rental prices jumped between 10 and 14% across 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom units, continuing a trend seen both locally and across the country. With an eye on supporting education, waterfront activity, and tourism, Council unanimously voted at their last meeting on Tuesday to explore options to waive or discount dockage fees at city-operated marinas and ports, specifically for vessels that contribute to community and tourism events or that offer free educational or public programming. The motion brought forward by Councillor Don Amos specifically references the tall ship St. Lawrence II, based out of Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. The ship, which calls Kingston's waterfront home, offers hands-on experiential education programs. Chris Chafe, Executive Director of Tallship Expeditions Canada Brigantine, came before Council to speak on behalf of the program and its impact.
Over the years, our community has grown increasingly distant from the water as a result of ever-compounding barriers to access. Even low-barrier avenues have become prohibitively expensive, and are often viewed as not for them by some economically disadvantaged and racialized Kingstonians. Half the youth we serve have never been on the water. This is a trend we want to see reversed by breaking down those barriers and enabling access for underserved members of our community. The lake isn't just a pretty backdrop. It isn't just a racetrack for wealthy sailors, nor is it a fishing pond for the well-to-do. The lake is the biggest public space we have and should be available to everyone. We've made an offer to staff to operate a barrier-free sailing and water access program to the community, as well as to open a boater and education space available to boaters and visitors at POH and the community more broadly in the past OLS location. The city recently made a sizable investment in that space to support the sleeping cabin project, which has now been sitting vacant for 2 years. We are offering the opportunity to breathe new life into a space by opening it to the public. It's been difficult for us to understand the city's position on mooring fees. All the ports we visit, Thunder Bay, St. John's, New York City, Halifax, Yananaque, and over a month in Lunenburg, all of these spaces were provided free of charge, and they were very happy to have us there, right, to open up the boat, to have youth engage with the ship. The only exception seems to be Kingston.
City staff are already in the process of reviewing Portsmouth Olympic Harbor as part of a broader visioning process. That work is focused on aligning site uses with Kingston's waterfront, supporting sailing, water sports, community access, and other opportunities. In bringing the motion forward, Councillor Amos pointed to the role tall ships and other specialty vessels play in strengthening Kingston's tourism profile, supporting waterfront activity, and fostering community pride. He also noted that other Canadian ports and marinas, such as Halifax and St. John's, already have programs in place that waive or reduce docking fees for educational and charitable vessels in recognition of their public value.
If you think of the 1800s, our waterfront was plastered with these type of ships, and now we don't have that. We don't have this type of ship that's coming into our ports very often, and this is a tourism opportunity for us. This is an opportunity for people to come out onto the dock, jump on the boat, see what a tall ship is about, and it's done for free. So it's something that our downtown tourism can sink their teeth into. It's something that if you're new to Kingston, if you're new to the country, and you're not familiar with the tall ships, you can see one that's actually working. And then any youth who has any sort of curiosity about our water and wants to see what a tall ship is about, what a great opportunity to come down with your family and have a tour of the boat and see what it's about. This, as we heard from our delegation today, that boat travels all over Eastern Ontario, well, all over Ontario, really, Lake Ontario, and then through the Atlantic Ocean from New York City to Halifax and everywhere along the eastern seaboard. This is an opportunity for us to really lean into our tall ship experience here in Kingston. This is its home dock. This is an opportunity for us to really bring something forward where the public can enjoy it and Kingston can take pride in it. You heard the captain speak. He is now going to be going through Tourism Kingston, and it'll be representing us at other ports. We need to embrace at our end its home port and what we can do for it. We are a city that says we thrive on history and innovation. History is here, and we have an opportunity to support it and let it thrive.
With council support, city staff are set to report back to council in the second quarter of 2026, with options for implementing fee waivers or cost reductions at city-operated marinas, along with an analysis of the financial costs and benefits to the city. At their last meeting on Tuesday, council voted to move forward with an expansion of support for heritage property owners, addressing an issue that's been growing across Kingston and the province. Changes made in 2023 to the Ontario Heritage Act shifted municipalities away from using listing as a long-term tool to protect heritage properties. As a result, many municipalities moved to formally designate previously listed properties before protections were lost. This has led to a sharp increase in heritage designations over the past 2 years. At the same time, the insurance industry has entered what's known as a hard market, with rising premiums linked to increasing environmental disasters. In this climate, some heritage property owners have reported difficulty securing insurance or facing higher premiums. While the province maintains that heritage designation alone should not affect insurance, in Kingston, a growing number of property owners have raised concerns about affordability and access to insurance. In some cases, this has resulted in council opting not to designate a property or, in one case, repealing an existing designation. These concerns led to a motion in August 2025 when council called on the province and insurance companies to explain why some heritage-designated properties were facing higher premiums or denied coverage altogether. When the report on the issue returned to council on Tuesday, Councillor Brandon Tozzo asked for an update on the city's outreach efforts.
Insurance costs have been such a challenge, I know, for some of our heritage properties. Have we had any movement from the province on this, of dealing with this? Because the report doesn't really speak to any discussions from the province on their end of doing anything about the insurance industry.
We haven't received any further information from the province related to this. There has been a little bit of movement from the National Trust of Canada, which has set up a new a support program for heritage properties as it relates to insurance.
That update came alongside a new set of recommendations from staff focused on expanding financial support for heritage property owners. The report recommended doubling the budget for the Heritage Property Grant Program to $200,000 per year, starting in 2026, and developing a new zero-interest loan program to help cover larger and more costly conservation and restoration projects. In addition, the report recommends exploring options for improving heritage protections, especially in rural Kingston. With unanimous support from council, staff are set to act on these recommendations and report back in late 2026. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the challenges the insurance issue has created and expressed hope that expanded financial support will help ease the pressure for heritage property owners.
This has been a very difficult time and a very difficult topic to manage. And I think that what you're proposing is thoughtful. I think it's helpful and it supports what we value so much here in Kingston. So no questions for you. I'm well aware of all the issues that we're trying to navigate, but I appreciate the approach and the care that's been taken.
While uncertainty remains without clear action from the province, the city is moving forward with local solutions. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is Henry bringing you the Queen's Campus Beat on CFRC 101.9. Queen's continues to make a mark on the international research stage. Earlier this month, the Queen's Genetically Engineered Machine Team, better known as QGEM, earned a gold medal and the Best Education Special Award at the 2025 IGEM iGEM competition in Paris. The undergraduate team also received a nomination for Best Therapeutics Project, putting them among the top-performing students groups worldwide. Their work brought together students from biology, engineering, computing, and other disciplines, highlighting how collaborative design can drive innovation solutions in synthetic biology. Team mentors noted that this year's success reflects years of steady growth within Queen's undergraduate research environment, from expanding lab access to interdisciplinary learning opportunities that let students build real-world applications for scientific theory. A vigil commemorating the 1989 École Polytechnique massacre took place on Saturday. At Queen's University, a ceremony was held at 11 a.m. in the Beamish Monroe Hall atrium, organized by engineering student leaders and campus partners. The event honored the 14 women killed in 1989 and included reflections on ongoing efforts to address gender-based violence and support women in STEM fields. Later in the afternoon, a second community vigil was held at 4 p.m. at the Kingston-Frontenac Public Library's Central Branch. This gathering brought together students, residents, and local organizers to remember the victims and reaffirm commitments to preventing violence against women and gender-diverse individuals. In a recent update about Queen's libraries, Queen's University has recently announced that its institutional repository, QSpace, is being migrated to Scholaris, a national shared repository service among Canadian university libraries. Under this move, all archived publications and research formerly stored in QSpace will be transferred to Scholaris, which is hosted by a consortium of Canadian universities and libraries. Data and long-term scholarly outputs will now be stored on Canadian university-owned data centers, promising improved security, reliability, and easier compliance with upcoming open access mandates from major funding agencies. The migration started earlier in November and is expected to be completed sometime this December, meaning that throughout the upcoming academic year, 2026, researchers and students at Queen's will have easier, streamlined access to modern, nationally integrated scholarly repositories. This isn't just some back-end technical change. For undergraduate students, graduate students, and faculty members, it means easier and more trustworthy access to research output from Queen's and other Canadian institutions. It helps ensure that these papers and data are openly accessible, preserved properly, and easier to discover. It also reflects Queen's commitment to open scholarship, sustainable infrastructure, and keeping pace with changing standards in academic publishing. I've been Henry Walker with your Queen's Campus Beat here on CFRC 101.9. Thank you for listening.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, December 8th. Chilly day here in the city of Kingston. -9 is your high, feeling closer to -10 with the wind chill, dropping down to -11 overnight. Tuesday, December 9th, the start of two potentially wild weather days here in the city of Kingston. It's going to be cloudy throughout the day, but as we approach the afternoon and evening, we could see 3 to 6 centimeters of snow. And then overnight, moving into Wednesday, December 10th, we could see another 5 to 10 centimeters of wet snow with cool, breezy conditions. So still too early to tell definitively, but there could be a tri-board snow day watch in effect. If not on Tuesday, then certainly Wednesday morning. Thursday, December 11th, daytime high of -5, feeling closer to -8. Friday, December 12th, another -5 day, but about 4 degrees colder with an overnight low of -12. Saturday, December 13th, daytime high of -5, overnight low of -8. However, with the wind chill, it will feel closer to -12. Sunday, December 14th, daytime high of -4, overnight low of -10. And then kicking off next week, Monday, December 15th, daytime high of -5 with an overnight low of -13. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Reminder that winter parking restrictions are in place as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight street parking will be banned only if the weather conditions require it. During January and February, overnight on-street parking is not permitted, no matter the weather conditions. With construction season winding down, there are fewer road closures than you would typically expect. Here are three relevant road closures in the Kingston area. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. And Berry Street, Queen 2 Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson. Expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's. Expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hey, how's it going? You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History. This is your concerts calendar for the week of December 8th to 14th, so let's see what's happening across Kingston. Starting off the week with some cozy sounds on Monday, December 8th, catch the Natalie and Dave Jazz Duo with classic jazz at the RCHA starting at 4:30 p.m. This is a perfect place to wind down after a chilly December Monday. Kentucky plays at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m., and to close out Monday, live jazz at Musiki starts at 8 p.m. This is always a lovely, intimate atmosphere. The energy picks up on Tuesday with Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam at the RCHA from 4 to 7 p.m. As well, there's Tegan McLaren at the Cove Inn starting at 5 p.m. with some country folk storytelling. And if you've got something to share, the open mic with Carrick McAllister is at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, starting off with some country, it's Dallas Smith at the Kingston Grand Theater starting at 7:30 p.m. Wings and Tunes open mic is at the Cove Inn starting at 5 p.m. Quentin Cautry brings acoustic originals to the Bank Gastro Bar starting at 5:30 p.m. It's Kingston's favorite, Christopher Jackson. He's playing at the Creekside Bar at 6 p.m. Finally, on Wednesday, over on Wolf Island, it's DJ Great White at Hotel Wolf Island from 4 to 7 p.m., followed by their open mic starting at 7:30. Even with a little chill in the air and snow on the ground, it's never been a better time to catch the ferry. Quite the lineup on Thursday, December 11th. Indie folk powerhouse Isanabi performs at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. Jeff Dunn is at the RCHA starting at 7 p.m. Blues at the Cove with Monkey Junk is at the Cove Inn from 7 to 11 p.m. This is a well-respected Canadian blues trio and a must-see. There's lots more on Thursday with Vivian Wilder at the Toucan starting at 9:30 p.m. Dakota's at Northside starting at 7:30 p.m. Donnie Cooper at the Creekside Bar at 6 p.m. Scott Owen at the Merchant starting at 9:30 p.m. And John McClurg at Timeout Bar at 4 p.m., followed by Ted Landlone at 7. Lots of special shows for the holiday season this weekend. On Friday, starting at 4 p.m., it's TGIF Happy Hour at the RCHA, always a familiar place to ease into the weekend. And stick around because the Big Fat Horn Band Christmas show is from 8 to 11 p.m., also at the RCHA. If you're looking for a cozy dinner on a cold December evening at the Cove Inn, it's Mikhail Laxton at 6 p.m. He has soulful vocals and warm acoustics, so a perfect night is coming your way. If you've got some more energy and you're looking for a bit of an adventure, head over to Wolf Island for Dumai Denai at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 6:30 p.m. This is Balkan-inspired folk punk. It's sure to be a good time and a good story. Triple bill at the Mansion on Friday with Wine Lips, The Strange Happenings, and The Mature Themes. Expect fast tempos, garage rock, and punk. Doors are at 7:30 p.m. The Bella Voca Chorus performs a holiday choral at the Spire starting at 7 p.m. And at Musiki at 8 p.m., Hollow Body brings mellow indie folk while at Overtime Sports Bar. It's Drop Zone at 8 p.m., which is a live mix of hip-hop and house. So put on your boogie shoes and get into a groove. To close out Friday, Trevor Walsh starts the night early at Timeout Bar from 4 to 6:30, followed by the Trevor Walsh Band at 7 p.m., and Bon Evans takes Tiernan Og at 9 p.m. Finally, if you're craving something nostalgic, Drink 182 hits the Toucan at 10:30 p.m. On Saturday, there's something for everyone. Starting off on the heavier side, metal lovers are going to love the Broom Factory lineup. Starting at 7:30 p.m., it's Bat Sabbath, Slipknot, and Pissfit. At the RCHA, it's the Big Fat Horn Band Christmas show again at 8 p.m., another guaranteed party, especially if you missed out on Friday's performance. At the Cove Inn, it's Young Petty Stones, but it's not just any show. This is their holiday rock show at 7 p.m., so think classic rock with a festive flair. To close out the week on Sunday, Garnet Rogers is at the Broom Factory at 3 p.m., and it's the 10th annual holiday show with Arabesque Academy of Dance at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 2 p.m. If you have a concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out at cfrc.ca or through the link tree in our Instagram at cfrcmusic.
Hey, this is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is your events calendar for December 8th through 14th. Whether you're looking for some holiday fun, trivia, or karaoke, Kingston is buzzing with events this week, so let's take a look. On Monday, we start the week with a holiday classic. Ballet Jorgens, The Nutcracker, is at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 6:30 p.m. And as always, trivia at Brass Pub starts at 7:45 p.m., so grab a drink and test your knowledge. And also trivia at Something in the Water Brewing starts at 8 p.m., a cozy atmosphere with great local beer and lots of laughs. On Tuesday, it's time for some holiday shopping at the Kingston Public Market at Springer Market Square from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. This production is known for its Canadian twist, so if you missed it on Monday, catch The Nutcracker again by Ballet Jorgen at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 6:30 p.m. The Community Song Circle at Kingston Community House runs from 6 to 8 p.m. Indigenous Drumming at Trellis HIV and Community Care is at 1 p.m. And Euchre at Daft Brewing starts at 7 p.m. As well, Jack's Tuesday Night Trivia is also at 7 p.m. On Wednesday, December 10th, Christmas at the Movies is presented by Frontenac Community Concert Band at the Spire starting at 7 p.m. And at the Broom Factory, it's the Broom Closet Burlesque and Cabaret Show starting at 7:30 p.m. This is sure to be a glamorous, high-energy night, but if you're looking for something on the more chill side, Trivia at Daft Brewing is at 7 p.m., Trivia at Wild Wing, 7:30. And of course, every Wednesday, the Karaoke Trifecta, Karaoke at Jersey Sports Bar at 7, Karaoke at Timeout Bar at 8, and Karaoke at the Mansion at 9 p.m. Another triple threat. This time it's trivia on Thursday with Riverhead Brewing starting at 7 p.m., the Grad Club starts at 8, and Queen's Pub at 9 p.m. Also on Thursday, it's Drag Bingo at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m. And if you just couldn't get enough of Wednesday night karaoke, why not make it Thursday night karaoke with Karaoke at Tiernan Og starting at 9 p.m. Kingston Public Market in Springer Market Square runs again from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Thursday. And on Friday, the Aline Ballerina Nutcracker Ballet takes the stage at Kingston Grand Theater at 5:30 p.m. This is a family-friendly adaptation and is sure to be a lovely early evening show. Starting off strong on Saturday, it's the Kingston Public Market in Springer Market Square again from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. This is a perfect time to browse for festive goods or a sweet treat to just take the bite off that cold weather. From 1 to 4 p.m., it's an afternoon in Paris with French wines, hors d'oeuvres, pastries, and vendors at St. George's Cathedral. Who wouldn't want a small taste of Europe right in downtown Kingston, especially in the cold winter months? And on Saturday, a great activity for the little ones. Families will love All Aboard the Dino Train at the Pump House Museum from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. This is an interactive event combining trains, dinosaurs, and hands-on learning. And if you're planning on staying out late on Saturday, it's karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 9 p.m. Finally, on Sunday, December 14th, we are closing out the weekend with some chill karaoke. Karaoke night at The Merchant begins at 8 p.m. This is a lively night with regulars in the weekend crowd, and if you're still in the mood to perform, karaoke at the Toucan is one of the city's most iconic late-night scenes. This starts at 10:30 p.m., so warm up those vocal cords. Thanks so much for joining me this week. As always, if you have an event that you'd like to add to our online or on-air events calendar, feel free to reach out today via cfrc.ca or using the link tree in our bio on our Instagram at cfrcmusic. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 295. And on the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with Nicolas Montgermont, who is a sound artist and social activist based in Paris, France. In this conversation, we feature some of Nicolas' work in relation to the social questions that are at play. Nicolas, for example, has developed a project where it was really brought forth in a physical way, a space where radio waves could not penetrate. The idea here was to create an awareness of the multiple waves, radio waves and others that shape our condition in contemporary life. And so there was an interactive public space created where people could enter a room and be outside of the influence of these waves. And I think that type of physical intervention is, of course, a creative construction, but it's also a space through which people can visit alternative possibilities and think critically about dynamics in society that are just accepted as normal. And so, of course, it's important to critique these things and think through them. Nicolas works online at nimon.org. And it was really great to speak to him about his work for Free City Radio. Here's our conversation. Nicolas, one thing I've really appreciated about the work that you do, which I've interacted with or learned about, is the exploration of sound work, but within public spaces and sort of creating environments where people are interacting with experimental sound works. But in the sense, what it made me think about is, in one way, this makes you more aware of your environment, and that can go in many directions. Being more aware of your sonic environment can lead you to be more open to being aware of your political environment, of your cultural environment. I'm sure this type of thinking informs some of your projects. But first, just to start, Nicolas, please introduce yourself. You're in Paris right now. And so please just introduce yourself and share, broadly speaking, a bit about your practice, and then we'll get into some specifics about some recent projects you've worked on.
Okay. Hello, Stéphane, and hello, everyone that is listening. I am Nicolas Montgermont. I'm an artist and teacher in Paris, France. In my art practice, I work mainly with waves that are sound waves and radio waves. So I have different kind of forms. I can do concerts, performances, editions, exhibitions, installations. I try to see what is the poetic in the vibration of a wave, what is a territory, a resonance, interferences. And I like to work alone, but mostly in collectives, either in a duo or in bigger collectives, sometimes even 10, 20, 30 people. And that's it.
So, yeah, thinking about radio and the space in between what radio speaks to, radio waves. There's a lot in what you described. Yes, of course, you do solo work, but you also work on these collective projects. So in terms of the work that you do, people can explore that at nimon.org. So one particular piece that I thought kind of speaks to the ways that radio exists in a space that's visible but also invisible is encagement. And so, you know, in a sense, it's an empty space, but it's also full, right? And I think that this is sort of the way that radio is also an imaginary, right? Like it's not a visible space, but it leaves a lot of space to dream and to think about what you're hearing, and in a way that's so much more liberatory than a sort of a social media screen time that's feeding images into your mind.
Yeah, maybe I can explain the piece really fast. Like Enkingement is a work that is trying to address this issue that we are surrounded by radio waves. And each one of us has in its pocket a mobile phone that is actually broadcasting in many, many different frequencies, you know, 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC. All these are different transmitters and receivers. And actually, as our space is surrounded by waves, we don't know what it is nowadays to be outside this radio space. And as you said, it has some different connective issue or constraints. I mean by that, at least there is two that I can define. One is that you are always connected to something. It means you have these applications, softwares running on your phone that are connecting you to people with message or with, I don't know, WhatsApp, Signal or whatever. But also all this addictive design of application that is built by this neotech people. And so somehow it is difficult nowadays to be in a space when you can focus on something and discuss with someone on the long term or listen to a piece in the long term. So what can be a space without this addictive connection in our pocket? And also in a more political aspect, you have all the time this device that is somehow a spy, that is sending signals everywhere, that can be used by governments, hackers, to listen to you. And so each time you want to have a difficult political discussion, for example, it's very usual to look at your phone and to imagine what you are seeing that is going through the network. So also, what is a space without this this spy next to you and in the pocket of everyone? And so what I try to do in Engagement is using a scientific process that is the Faraday cage. That is the same process you have on the panel of your microwave oven. It's actually, when you look at your microwave oven, you have a little grid of metal. And this grid is preventing the radio wave that is inside to get out of the oven. And so using a special mesh of metal, I build like a large structure that can be, 100 square meters, for example. And when we get inside this structure, we actually get in a space where your phone is not connected anymore to the network. So in this, it is a visual venue space as well, because you have this very special and beautiful mesh all around you. And also it is, a radio white zone, radio free zone. And so what I tried to do when I exhibited this piece is to organize different things inside. For example, people gathering to listen to a political conference, people gathering to listen to concerts, people gathering to have a drink, you know, and to see what is happening in, with people, actually. Because, as I said, you cannot, at the moment, in many, many countries and in a few months and in a few years, all over the planet with this kind of satellite network, internet connection, but at the moment, you cannot escape this radio wave environment. And so what you usually say is like you say to people, but you can leave your phone at home. But it doesn't mean there is a space. The problem is not an individual problem. The problem is a collective or social problem. And so when you build this space, it's very interesting to see, like, for example, I was expecting people to still look at their phones every few minutes, for you see what I mean? Or, I don't know, it's actually an experiment. And no, not at all. People were not getting their phone out anymore, you know? Like, you actually lose this awful habit to get your phone out to see if something has happened inside. And so, yeah, this idea of physically seeing this radio wave by building a grid, you can actually physically destroy the behavior of your phone by reflecting the waves, and also what is the mental process afterwards, like when you are not connected anymore.
I love the fact that this was embodied in a physical space, and that you gathered people to be there together and to listen together, and that collectivity is beautiful. Also, just for people hearing, you had said the Faraday cage, so I assume that's related to Michael Faraday, the scientist who discovered the electromagnetic kind of dynamics of the Earth as a body in space. There was many others involved in that process, but it's an interesting also historical reference, which was very important in terms of understanding the relationship between the Earth and the Sun and electromagnetic fields. I think important to also be aware of our physical environments. In a sense, you know, it's interesting that when you're describing encagement as a project, I'll go back to my question, because on my part, I've always been interested in radio as a space where there's more imaginary than these social media platforms. I mean, they're called that, but they're also corporate platforms that are pushing people every day to work for these corporations for free. Every time people are on these platforms, you're making these corporations cash. So in a sense, I see your work and also your other projects are sort of interventions in a sense. They're public interventions. And I know that you have a relationship both to these types of practices as an artist, but also you do participate in political collective movements on the streets. We talked once about being present in demonstrations. Maybe just talk a bit more about encagement and how that sort of the conceptual thinking around this work relates also to your decision to be both, you know, somebody creating such works as, sort of a multidisciplinary artist, if we want to use that term, but also somebody who's participating in political movements.
I don't know, for example, in engagement, one axis was nobody decided we want 4G or 5G, for example. And so this is a very important democratic issue. So there is a lot of, at least in France, acts of resistance, trying to say, but we have to discuss it. We want to discuss the fact that do we want to be surrounded by waves? Do we want more bandwidth, more power? Do we want to buy new smartphones and these kind of things? And so I think it's really important to see how the relationship between an individual way of seeing things. For example, I don't know, you don't eat meat because you politically you say to yourself it's not possible nowadays to have to eat all this meat, it's a ecological catastrophe, or you prevent yourself from using Instagram because you say Meta is an awful company and I don't want to be part of it. But how can you build a collective environment? The individual solution is not, it's a step, but it's not a way to organize things between each other. So I think it's really important to try to aim to some solutions. And the collective, in a way, it can be somehow a way, and let's say, a way to organize that can be ideal. For example, it's sometimes easier to have a very political point of view as a collective than as an individual. So I think maybe, I don't know if I answer well your question, but I think it's really in each collective you can address a specific issue, for example, and try to progress toward this issue, this political issue, to build something the way you want it to be. And so it's not all your life, it's not how you will live your everyday life, your complete life, but in a way, it is very powerful because you can aim to something idealistic. And so you can really try to see the difference in between the conceptual way of seeing things. I don't know, let's say, for example, the horizontal relationship, like we're having no hierarchy in between people. And so you have this concept that is very strong and powerful, but it's also idealistic. So when you organize and you try to organize like that, what is the real constraints you encounter? And so, I think it's very important to use the collective as a tool to build a strong objectives.
So I think this is sort of a tension in France, and I'm sure that you feel that, because there is a sort of collective street level culture. For example, I think that played a role in preventing the extreme right from winning the elections there, which I think is important to talk about, because I don't know if a lot of people really understand the role that street culture played. And I'm sure that this also informs your thinking as an artist also.
Yes, it's true. There is a lot of, let's call them social movements in France. It's very usual every 1 year or 2 years. There is some kind of public gathering and struggle against the law, against the situation. There is usually a fire starter. But afterwards, after a few days, a few weeks, a few months, it is gathering a lot of different political situations. As G.D. Butler said, it is a multitude. Like, not everybody is there for the same reason, for sure. There is as many reasons as there is people. And I forgot my development. I was seeing. There is this collective social movements in France against law, pension reform, against the situation, the yellow vest, for the election last year, for example, to allow the I don't want to call them left, but at least the center political field to be in the very little majority in the parliament. But each time we are doing these social movements, it's true, we have a lot of defeat. It's very rare we win something. But we are building social relationships. We are building political relationships. We are building a way to organize together, to build decisions together, to build actions together. And so that is not a defeat on this side, because, for example, in a lot of political movements, it's also a way to meet people. It's also a way to displace yourself as a political individual. I don't know. It's in many ways it gives you a lot of political power, and you understand what has been stolen from you. Like to vote, for example, is not giving you political power. It's like the least power you can have. But when you are gathering with people, making actions, organizing, then you remember what politics should be. And actually, there is a little news about that, because there is a big movement that is organizing for the 10th of September. For a few months now, that is more or less connected to the Yellow Vest and to some left-wing party syndicates. So we will see what will happen. But the 10th of September is a date we are really looking forward for a few months now in France.
Interesting. So we're speaking in August 2025, and this fall you talked about September there being a political mobilization. I really appreciated when I met you in person in Montreal, you clearly made that connection between street level sort of mobilizations in France and your practice as an artist, which I think, is something important to talk about a little bit. So maybe you can share a bit more about how you sort of weave or connect these two practices, because also being on the street, as you know, is a practice. There's tactics, there's language, there's discussion, and then also creating space in the arts is another practice. They can be connected, but there's a decision that has to be made to be present in both of those spaces. And I found it interesting that you are present in those two different spaces.
Yeah, actually, I find it really difficult nowadays, at least in France, to connect truly these two different levels. But from my experience, what has What I've been able to do is, for example, to be in some artist collectives that have also a political thinking, and that develops a lot of tools. For example, I said it earlier, like to organize horizontally, for example, it is a tool. You know how to discuss with people, you know how to make a synthesis, you know how to use some free tool online or on computers. And also regarding technological tools, like streaming, like radio broadcasting, pirate broadcasting, I don't know, many different technologies also. When you work as an experimental artist, you manage to touch them, to get an experience with them. And sometimes just having these little experiences as an artist can be transferred easily. It is a possibility to transfer some technological skills you have developed in this field toward the political field. But for me, it's very difficult to connect these two words. And I find the nowadays, I think in France there is a big separation in these two fields, and I don't know how to reunite them. But in the history of France and in many different recent social movements in different countries, the artist movement is connected to the social movement, and it gives to the movement power. For example, reinventing some way of broadcasting your ideas, reinventing the way you can connect to people, the way you can, even organize visually, physically. And there is maybe more people that knows better than me in France. So at my level, I find it difficult to connect. But I try. Nowadays when I'm building an art piece, I will think to myself: is there some kind of political function I can use besides it? And so, for example, in Encagement, the piece I described before, I was thinking to myself, okay, it is a good place to actually have political meetings for political groups, you know, like after the exhibition is open, when it's closed during the night, you can have a social political discussion there, and you can so you're free from this phone linking problems. For example, or in another piece, Radio Symmetrique, when I build this kind of autonomous radio, maybe I will describe it, but whatever. So there is a part of the setup that I can unplug, and it becomes an FM pirate transmitter, and it has been used in many different political contexts, for example. So maybe, you know, the only way I can see it very directly is technically to transfer some skills and some hardware, some equipment, some software. And this is something that is very easily done, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think what's interesting is the sort of practice of art and creation, especially when you're doing pieces outside of a direct market context, creates a condition where there's a collective learning, right? And the different pieces you've talked about involving the Faraday cage in Encagement, where you're sort of physically creating the conditions outside of mass surveillance, at least through radio waves. It's very interesting to think about that sort of presence of surveillance and then by extension surveillance culture. You mentioned Radio Symmetrique, which also is another project where you transferred that sort of micro broadcasting into pirate broadcasting, right? And I know that pirate broadcasting has been important for social movements in France, also in terms of not just recent, but more historically, going back to the 1970s and the 1980s. So it's interesting. I think your work in some ways is also an educational tool to sort of open up thinking about these different points. And I appreciate that. Great to speak with you. Thank you so much for opening a little window into your projects. I really appreciate it, Nico.
Thanks for the invitation to discuss.
That was a conversation with Nicolas Montgermont. You can find more about his work in France and beyond at nimon.org. I'm Stéphane Christophe. Thanks so much for tuning in to Free City Radio. We are weekly broadcast. Thanks to the Social Justice Center at Concordia University for supporting this program. We're broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.